Chapter 16. A Touch on the Cheek. The Tarasin Palace was a mass of shining marble and white plaster, with screened balconies of white-painted wrought iron and columned walks, as much as 4 stories above the ground. Pigeons wheeled around pointed domes and tall balcony-wreathed spires banded in red and green tiles, glittering in the sun. Sharp-arched gates in the palace itself led to various courtyards, and more pierced the high wall hiding the gardens. But deep, snowy white steps, 10 spans wide, climbed on the side facing Malhara Square, to great doors carved in coiling patterns like the balcony screens, and covered with beaten gold. The dozen or so guards lined up before those doors, sweating in the sun, wore gilded breastplates over green coats and baggy white trousers stuffed into dark green boots. Green cords secured thick twists of white cloth around glittering golden helmets, with the long ends hanging down their backs. Even their halberds and the scabbards of their daggers and short swords shone with gold. Guards for being looked at, not fighting. But then, when Matt reached the top, he could see swordsmen's calluses on their hands. Always before, he had entered through one of the stable yards to peruse the palace horses in passing, but this time he was going in the way a lord would. "The light's blessing on all here," he said to their officer, a man not much older than he. Abu Dhari were polite people. "I've come to leave a message for Nynaeve Sedai and Elaine Sedai, or to give it to them if they've returned." The officer stared at him, looked at the stairs in consternation. Gold cord as well as green on his pointed helmet signified some rank Matt did not know, and he carried a gilded rod instead of a halberd, with a sharp end and a hook like an ox goad. By his expression, no one had ever come up that way before. Studying Matt's coat, he mulled it over visibly, and at last decided he could not tell him to go away. With a sigh, the man murmured a benison in return and asked Matt's name, pushed open a small door in one of the larger, and ushered him into a grand entry hall, encircled by 5 stone-railed balconies beneath a domed ceiling painted like the sky, complete with clouds and a sun. The guard's snapping fingers summoned a slim young serving woman in a white dress, sewn up on the left to show green petticoats and embroidered on the left breast, with a green anchor and sword. She scurried across the red and blue marble floor, looking startled, curtsying to Matt and the officer each. Short black hair framed a sweetly pretty face, with silken olive skin, and her livery had the deep, narrow neckline common to all women except nobles in Abu Dhar. For once, Matt did not really notice. When she heard what he wanted, her big black eyes widened even more. Aes Sedai were not unpopular in Abu Dhar, exactly, but most Abu Dhari would go a long distance out of their way to avoid one. "Yes, Sword Lieutenant," she said, bobbing again. "Of course, Sword Lieutenant. May it please you to follow me, my lord." It did. Outside, Abu Dhar sparkled white, but inside, color ran wild. There seemed to be miles of broad corridor in the palace, and here the ceiling was blue and the walls yellow, there the walls pale red and the ceiling green, changing with every turn. Combinations to jar any eye but a tinker's. Matt's boots sounded loud on the floor tiles that made patterns of 2 or 3 or sometimes 4 colors in diamonds or stars or triangles. Wherever hallways crossed, the floor was a mosaic of tiny tiles, intricate swirls and scrolls and loops. A few silk tapestries displayed scenes of the sea, and arched niches held carved crystal bowls and small statues and yellow seafolk porcelain that would fetch a fine penny anywhere. Occasionally a liveried servant hurried along silently, often as not carrying a silver tray or a golden. Normally, displays of wealth made Matt feel comfortable. For one thing, where there was money, some might stick to his fingers. This time he felt impatient, more so by the step, and anxious. The last time he had felt the dice rolling so hard in his head was just before he found himself with 300 of the band, 1,000 of Gabriel's white lions on a ridge to his front, and another 1,000 coming hard up the road behind him, when all he had been trying to do was ride away from the entire mess. That time he had avoided the chop by the grace of other men's memories and more luck than he had a right to. The dice almost always meant danger and something else he had not figured out yet. The prospect of having his skull cracked was not enough, and once or twice there had been no possibility of such, yet the upcoming likelihood of Matt Cawthon dead in some spectacular fashion seemed the most usual cause. Unlikely, maybe, in the Tarasin Palace, but unlikely did not make the dice go away. He was going to leave his message, grab Nynaeve and Elaine by the scruff of the neck if he had an opportunity, give them a talking to that made their ears glow, and then get out. The young woman glided ahead of him until they reached a short, bullish man, a little older than she, another servant, in tight white breeches, a white shirt with wide sleeves, and a long green vest with the anchor and sword of House Mitzobar in a white disc. "Master Jen," she said, curtsying once more, "this is Lord Matt Cawthon, who wishes to leave a message for the honored Elaine Aes Sedai and the honored Nynaeve Aes Sedai." "Very good, Hazel. You may go." He bowed to Matt. "May it please you to follow me, my lord." Jen led him as far as a dark, grim-faced woman, short of her middle years, and bowed. "Mistress Karen, this is Lord Matt Cawthon, who wishes to leave a message for the honored Elaine Aes Sedai and the honored Nynaeve Aes Sedai." "Very good, Jen. You may go. May it please you to follow me, my lord."
Karen took him up a sweeping flight of marble stairs, the risers painted yellow and red, to a skinny woman named Matilda, who handed him over to a stout fellow named Bren, who led him to a balding man named Maddock, each a little older than the one before. Where five quarters met like the spokes of a wheel, Maddock left him with a round woman called Laren, who had a touch of gray at her temples and a stately carriage. Like Karen and Matilda, she wore what the Ebudari called a marriage knife, hanging hilt down from a close-fitting silver necklace between more than plump breasts. Five white stones in the hilt, two set in red, and four red stones, one surrounded by black, said three of her nine children were dead, two sons in duels. Rising out of her curtsy to Matt, Laren began to float up one of the hallways, but he hurried to catch her arm. Dark eyebrows rose slightly as she glanced at his hand. She had no dagger except the marriage knife, but he released her immediately. Custom said she could only use that on her husband, yet there was no point in pushing. He did not soften his voice, though. "How far do I have to go to leave a note? Show me to their rooms. A pair of Aes Sedai shouldn't be that hard to find. This isn't the Bloody White Tower."
"Aes Sedai," a woman said behind him in a heavy Ilianer accent. "If you do seek two Aes Sedai, you have found two."
Laren's face did not change, or almost not. Her nearly black eyes darted past him, and he was sure they tightened with worry. Doffing his hat, Matt turned, wearing an easy smile. With that silver fox head around his neck, Aes Sedai did not put him off at all. Well, not very much. It had those flaws. Maybe the smile was not that easy. The two women confronting him could not have been more different. One was slender, with a fetching smile, in a gold and green dress that showed a hint of what he judged to be a fine bosom. Except for that ageless face, he might have thought to strike up a conversation. It was a pretty face, with eyes large enough for a man to sink into. A pity. The other one had the ageless face, too, but seeing it took him a moment. He thought she was scowling until he realized that must be her normal expression. Her dark, almost black dress covered her to the wrists and chin, for which he was grateful. She looked scrawny as an old bramble. She looked as if she ate brambles for breakfast. "I'm trying to leave a message for Nynaeve and Elaine," he told them. "This woman..." He blinked, looking down each of the corridors. Servants hurried by, but Laren was nowhere in sight. He would not have thought she could move so fast. "Anyway, I want to leave a note." Suddenly cautious, he added, "Are you friends of theirs?"
"Not exactly," the pretty one said. "I am Jolene, and this is Teslin. And you are Matt Cawthon."
Matt's stomach tightened.
9 Aes Sedai in the palace, and he had to walk into the 2 who followed Elida, and one of them Red. Not that he had anything to fear. He lowered his hand to his side before it could touch the fox head under his clothes. The one who ate brambles, Teslin, stepped closer. She was a sitter, according to Tom, though what a sitter was doing here even Tom did not understand.
"We would be their friends if we could. They do need friends, Master Cawthon, as do you."
Her eyes tried to dig holes in his head. Jolene moved to flank him, laying a hand on his lapel. He would have considered that smile inviting from another woman. She was Green Aja. "They are on dangerous ground and blind to what lies beneath their feet. I know you are their friend. You might show it by telling them to abandon this nonsense before it is too late. Foolish children who go too far can find themselves punished quite severely."
Matt wanted to back away. Even Teslin stood close enough to be almost touching him. Instead, he put on his most insolent grin. It had always landed him in trouble back home, but it seemed appropriate. Those dice in his head could have nothing to do with this pair, or they would have stopped spinning. And he did have the medallion.
"They see pretty well, I'd say."
Nynaeve badly needed to be snatched down a peg or 6, and Elaine even more, but he was not about to stand by and listen to this woman talk Nynaeve down. If that meant defending Elaine too, so be it.
"Maybe you should abandon your nonsense."
Jolene's smile vanished, but Teslin replaced it with one of her own, a razored smile.
"We do know about you, Master Cawthon."
She looked a woman who wanted to skin something, and whoever was handy would do.
"Tavirin, it do be said, with dangerous associations of your own. That do be more than hearsay."
Jolene's face was ice.
"A young man in your position who wished to be assured of his future could do much worse than seek the protection of the tower. You should never have left it."
His stomach clenched tighter. What else did they know? Surely not about the medallion. Nynaeve and Elaine knew, and Adelais and Vandine, and the light only knew who they had told, but surely not this pair. There was worse than Tavirin or the Foxhead, though, or even Rand, as far as he was concerned, if they knew about the bloody horn. Abruptly he was yanked away from them so hard that he stumbled and nearly dropped his hat. A slender woman with a smooth face and nearly white hair, gathered at the back of her neck, had him by sleeve and lapel. Reflexively, Teslin seized him the same way on the other side. He recognized the straight-backed newcomer in her plain gray dress, in a way. She was either Adelais or Vandine, two sisters, real sisters, not just Aes Sedai, who might as well have been twins. He could never tell them apart for certain. She and Teslin stared at one another, chill and serene, two cats with a paw on the same mouse.
"No need to tear my coat off," he growled, trying to shrug free. "My coat?"
He was not sure they heard. Even wearing the fox head, he was not prepared to go as far as prying their fingers free, unless he had to. Two other Aes Sedai accompanied whichever sister it was, though one, a dark, stocky woman with inquisitive eyes, was marked by no more than the great serpent ring and the brown-fringed shawl she wore, displaying the white flame of Tarvalin among vines on her back. She appeared to be just a little older than Nynaeve, which made her Saritha Tomaris, only 2 years or so Aes Sedai.
"Do you stoop to kidnapping men in the halls now, Teslin?" the other one said. "A man who cannot channel can hardly be of interest to you."
Short and pale in lace-trimmed gray, slashed with blue, she was all cool, ageless elegance and confident smile. A Kyrianan accent identified her.
He had certainly attracted the top dogs in the yard.
Tom had not been sure whether Jolene or Teslin was in charge of Elida's embassy, but Merlilla led the one from those idiots who had tricked Egwene into becoming their Armelin. Matt could have shaved with Teslin's return smile.
"Do not dissemble with me, Merlilla. Matt Cawthon do be of considerable interest. He should no be running loose."
As if he was not standing there listening.
"Don't fight over me," he said. Tugging his coat was not making anyone let go. "There's enough to go around." Five sets of eyes made him wish he had kept his mouth shut. Aes Sedai had no sense of humor. He pulled a little harder, and Van Deen, or Adelius, jerked back hard enough to pull the coat out of his hand. Van Deen, he decided. She was green, and he had always thought she wanted to turn him upside down and shake the secret of the medallion out of him. Whichever she was, she smiled, part knowing, part amused. He saw nothing funny. The others did not look at him long. He might as well have vanished.
"What he needs," Jolene said firmly, "is to be taken into custody, for his own protection and more. Three Tavirin coming out of a single village, and one of them the dragon reborn? Master Cawthon should be sent to the White Tower immediately."
And he had thought her pretty. Marilla only shook her head.
"You overestimate your situation here, Jolene, if you think I will simply allow you to take the boy." "You overestimate yours, Melilla."
Jolene stepped closer until she was looking down at the other woman. Her lips curved, superior and condescending.
"Or do you understand that it's only a wish not to offend Tylan that keeps us from confining all of you on bread and water until you can be returned to the tower?"
Matt expected Marilla to laugh in her face, but she shifted her head slightly as if she really wanted to break away from Jolene's gaze.
"You would not dare."
Saritha wore Aes Sedai tranquility like a mask, face smooth and hands calmly adjusting her shawl, but her breathy voice shouted that it was a mask.
"These are children's games, Jolene,"
Van Deen murmured dryly. Surely that was who she was. She was the only one of the three who really did appear unruffled. Faint splashes of color blossomed on Merlilla's cheeks as if the white-haired woman had spoken to her, but her own gaze steadied.
"You can hardly expect us to go meekly," she told Jolene firmly, "and there are five of us. Seven, counting Nynaeve and Elaine."
The last was a clear afterthought, and reluctant at that. Jolene arched an eyebrow. Teslin's bony fingers did not loosen their grip any more than Van Deen's, but she studied Jolene and Merlillo with an unreadable expression.
"Aes Sedai were a country of strangers, where you never knew what to expect until it was too late. There were deep currents here. Deep currents around Aes Sedai could snatch a man to his death without them so much as noticing. Maybe it was time to start prying at fingers."
Laren's sudden reappearance saved him the effort. Struggling to control her breath, as if she had been running, the plump woman spread her skirts in a curtsy, markedly deeper than she had given him.
"Forgiveness for disturbing you, Aes Sedai, but the Queen summons Lord Cawthon. Forgiveness, please. It's more than my ears are worth if I don't bring him straight away."
The Aes Sedai looked at her, all of them, till she began to fidget. Then the two groups stared at one another as if trying to see who could out-Aes Sedai who. And then they looked at him. He wondered whether anybody was going to move.
"I can't keep the Queen waiting now, can I?" he said cheerily.
From the sniffs, you would have thought he had pinched somebody's bottom. Even Laren's brows drew down in disapproval.
"Release him, Adelius,"
Merlilla said finally. He frowned as the white-haired woman complied. "Those two ought to wear little signs with their names or different color hair ribbons or something." She gave him another of those amused, knowing smiles. He hated that. It was a woman's trick, not just Aes Sedai, and they usually did not know anything at all like what they wanted you to believe. "Teslin," he said. The grim red still had hold of his coat with both hands. She peered up at him, ignoring everyone else.
"The Queen?"
Merlilla opened her mouth and hesitated, obviously changing what she had been going to say.
"How long do you intend to stand here holding him, Teslin? Perhaps you will try to explain to Tylan why her summons is disregarded." "Consider well who you do tie yourself to, Master Cawthon,"
Teslin said, still looking only at him.
"Wrong choices can lead to an unpleasant future, even for a Tavirin. Consider well."
Then she let go. As he followed Laren, he did not allow himself to show his eagerness to be away, but he did wish the woman would walk a little faster. She glided along ahead of him, regal as any queen. Regal as any Aes Sedai. When they reached the first turning, he looked over his shoulder. The five Aes Sedai were still standing there, staring after him. As if his look had been a signal, they exchanged silent glances and went, each in a different direction. Adelaus came toward him, but a dozen steps before reaching him, she smiled at him again and disappeared through a doorway. Deep currents. He preferred swimming where his feet could touch the bottom of the pond. Laren was waiting around the corner, hands on broad hips and her face much too smooth. Beneath her skirts, he suspected her foot was tapping impatiently. He gave her his most winning smile. Giggling girls or gray-haired grandmothers, women softened for that one. It had won him kisses and eased him out of predicaments more often than he could count. It was almost as good as flowers. "That was neatly done, and I thank you. I'm sure the queen doesn't really want to see me." If she did, he did not want to see her. Everything he thought about nobles was tripled for royalty. Nothing he had found in those old memories changed that, and some of those fellows had spent considerable time around kings and queens and the like. "Now, if you will just show me where Nynaeve and Elaine stay..." Strangely, the smile did not seem to have any effect. "I would not lie, Lord Cawthon. It would be more than my years are worth. The queen is waiting, my lord. You are a very brave man," she added, turning, then said something more under her breath. "Or a very great fool." He doubted he had been supposed to hear that. A choice between going to see the queen and wandering miles of corridor until he stumbled on somebody who would tell him what he wanted to know, he went to see the queen. "Tylin Quintara, by the grace of the light, queen of Altara, mistress of the four winds, guardian of the sea of storms, high seat of House Mitsubar, awaited him in a room with yellow walls and a pale blue ceiling, standing before a huge white fireplace with a stone lintel carved into a stormy sea. She was well worth seeing, he decided. Tylin was not young. The shiny black hair cascading over her shoulders had gray at the temples, and faint lines webbed the corners of her eyes. Nor was she exactly pretty, though the two thin scars on her cheeks had nearly vanished with age. Handsome came closer, but she was imposing. Large dark eyes regarded him majestically, an eagle's eyes. She had little real power. A man could ride beyond her writ in 2 or 3 days and still have a lot of Altara ahead. But he thought she might even make an Aes Sedai step back. Like Isabella of Dal Kalain, who had made the Amarlan Angara come to her. That was one of the old memories. Dal Kalain had vanished in the Trolloc Wars. "Majesty," he said, sweeping his hat wide in a bow and flourishing an imaginary cloak, "by your summons do I come." Imposing or not, it was hard to keep his eyes away from the not-small lace-trimmed oval where her white-sheathed marriage knife hung. A very nicely rounded sight indeed. Yet the more bosom a woman displayed, the less she wanted you to look. Openly, at least. White-sheathed, but he already knew she was a widow. Not that it mattered. He would as soon tangle himself with that fox-faced dark friend as with a queen. Not looking at all was difficult, but he managed. Most likely she would call guards rather than draw the gem-encrusted dagger thrust behind a woven gold belt to match the collar her marriage knife hung from. Maybe that was why the dice were still rolling in his head. The possibility of an encounter with the headsman would set them spinning if anything did. Layered silk petticoats rippled white and yellow as she crossed the room and walked slowly all the way around him. "You speak the old tongue," she said, once she stood in front of him again. Her voice was low-pitched and musical. Without waiting for a reply, she glided to a chair and sat, adjusting her green skirts. An unconscious gesture, her gaze remained fixed on him. He thought she could probably tell when his small clothes had been washed last. "You wish to leave a message? I have what is necessary." A lace fall at her wrist swayed as she gestured to a small writing table standing beneath a gilt-framed mirror. All the furnishings were gilded and carved like bamboo. Tall, triple-arched windows opening onto a wrought-iron balcony admitted a sea breeze that was surprisingly pleasant, if not exactly cool. Yet Matt felt hotter than in the street, and it had nothing to do with her stare.
De yenayi, diu ninte concion calietye.
That was what he had said. The bloody old tongue popping out of his mouth again, without him knowing it. He had thought he had that little bother under control. No telling when those bloody dice would stop, or for what. Best to keep his eyes to himself and his mouth shut as much as possible.
I thank you, Majesty. He made very sure of those words.
Thick sheets of pale paper already weighted on the slanted table, at a comfortable height for writing. He propped his hat against the table leg. He could see her in the mirror, watching. Why had he let his tongue run loose? Dipping a golden pen, what else would a queen have? He composed what he wanted to write in his head before bending over the paper with an arm curled around it. His hand was awkward and square. He had no love of writing. I followed a dark friend to the palace Jakim Karadin is renting. She tried to kill me once, and maybe Rand as well. She was greeted like an old friend of the house. For a moment he studied that, biting the end of the pen before realizing he was scoring the soft gold. Maybe Tylin would not notice. They needed to know about Karadin. What else? He added a few more reasonably worded lines. The last thing he wanted to do was put their backs up. Be sensible. If you have to go traipsing around, let me send a few men along to keep you from having your head split open. Anyway, isn't it about time I took you back to Egwene? There's nothing here but heat and flies, and we can find plenty of those in Camelin. There. They could not ask for pleasanter than that. Blotting the page carefully, he folded it four times. Sand in a small golden bowl covered a coal. He puffed on it till it glowed, then used it to light a candle and picked up the stick of red wax. As the sealing wax dripped onto the edges of the paper, it suddenly struck him that he had a signet ring in his pocket. Just something the ringmaker had carved to show his skill, but better than a plain lump. The ring was slightly longer than the pool of solidifying wax, yet most of the sigil took. For the first time, he got a good look at what he had bought. Inside a border of large crescents, a running fox seemed to have startled two birds into flight. That made him grin. Too bad it was not a hand, for the band, but appropriate enough. He certainly needed to be crafty as a fox to keep up with Nynaeve and Elaine, and if they were not exactly flighty, well... Besides, the medallion had made him fond of foxes. He scrawled Nynaeve's name on the outside, and then Elaine's, as an afterthought. One or the other, they should see it soon. Turning with the sealed letter held in front of him, he gave a start as his knuckles brushed against Tylin's bosom. He stumbled back against the writing table, staring and trying not to turn red. Staring at her face. Just her face. He had not heard her approach. Best to simply ignore the brushing, not embarrass her any further. She probably thought he was a clumsy lout as it was. There is something in this you should know, Majesty. Insufficient room remained between them to lift the letter. Jakim Karadin is entertaining dark friends, and I don't mean arresting them.
You are certain? Of course you are. No one would make that charge without being certain.
A furrow creased her brow, but she gave her head a shake, and the frown disappeared.
Let us speak of more pleasant things.
He could have yelped. He told her the white cloak ambassador to her court was a dark friend, and all she did was grimace.
You are Lord Matt Cawthon?
There was just a hint of question in the title. Her eyes minded him more than ever of an eagle's. A queen could not like someone coming to her pretending to be a lord. Just Matt Cawthon. Something told him she would hear a lie. Besides, letting people think he was a lord was just a ruse, one he would rather have managed without. In Abu Dhar you could find a duel any time you turned around, but few challenged lords except other lords. As it was, in the last month he had cracked a number of heads, bloodied 4 men and run 0.5 mile to escape a woman. Thailand's stare made him nervous, and those dice still rattled about in his skull. He wanted out of here. If you'll tell me where to leave the letter, Majesty.
The Daughter Heir and Nynaeve Sedai seldom mention you, she said. But one learns to hear what is not said.
Casually, she reached up and touched his cheek. He half raised his own hand, uncertainly. Had he smeared ink there, chewing the pen? Women did like to tidy things, including men. Maybe queens did, too.
What they do not say, but I hear, is that you are an untamed rogue, a gambler and chaser after women.
Her eyes held his, expression never altering a hair, and her voice stayed firm and cool, but as she spoke, her fingers stroked his other cheek.
Untamed men are often the most interesting. To talk to.
A finger outlined his lips.
An untamed rogue who travels with Aes Sedai. A Taviran who, I think, makes them a little afraid. Uneasy, at the least. It takes a man with a strong liver to make Aes Sedai uneasy. How will you bend the pattern in Abu Dhar, just Matt Cawthon?
Her hand settled against his neck. He could feel his pulse throbbing against her fingers. His mouth fell open. The writing table behind his back rattled against the wall as he tried to back away. The only way out was to push her aside or climb over her skirts. Women did not behave this way. Oh, some of those old memories suggested they did. But it was mainly memories of memories, that woman had done this or this woman had done that. The things he recalled clearly were battles for the most part, and no help here at all. She smiled, a faint curl of her lips that did not lessen the predatory gleam in her eyes. The hair on his head tried to stand up. Her eyes flickered over his shoulder to the mirror, and she turned abruptly, leaving him gaping at her back as she moved away.
"I must arrange to speak with you again, Master Cawthon.
She cut off as the door swung all the way open, apparently surprised, but then he realized she had seen it begin moving in the mirror. A slender young man entered, limping slightly, a dark lad with sharp eyes that flicked by Matt with barely a pause. Black hair hung to his shoulders, and he wore one of those coats that was never meant to be worn normally draped across his shoulders, green silk with a gold chain across his chest and gold leopards worked in the lapels. "Mother," he said, bowing to Thailand and touching his lips with his fingers.
"Beslan."
She filled the name with warmth and kissed him on both cheeks and his eyelids. The firm, even icy tone she had used with Matt might as well have never been.
"It went well, I see."
"Not as well as it might," the boy sighed. Despite his eyes, he had a mild manner to him and a soft voice. "Nevin nicked my leg on the second pass, then slipped on the third, so I ran him through the heart instead of his sword arm. The offense was not worth killing, and now I must pay condolences to his widow." He seemed to regret that as much as this Nevin's death. Thailand's beaming face hardly seemed right on a woman whose son had just told her he had killed a man.
"Just be sure your visit is brief. Stab my eyes, but Dravindra will be one of those widows who wants comforting. And then you will either have to marry her or kill her brothers."
By her tone, the first alternative was much the worse, the second merely a nuisance.
"This is Master Matt Cawthon, my son. He is Taviran. I hope you'll make a friend of him. Perhaps you two will go to the Swovan night dances together."
Matt jumped. The last thing he wanted was to go anywhere with a fellow who fought duels and whose mother wanted to stroke Matt Cawthon's cheek. "I am not much for balls," he said quickly. Abu Dhari liked festivals, beyond reason. Here High Chazaline was just passed, and they had 5 more in the next week. 2 all-day affairs, not just the simpler evening feasts. "I do my dancing in taverns. The rougher sort, I'm afraid. Nothing you'd like." "I favor taverns of the rougher sort," Beslan said with a smile, in that soft voice.
The balls are for older people, and their pretties.
After that, it was all downhill on crumpling shingle. Before Matt knew what was happening, Tylan had him sewed up in a sack. He and Beslin would be attending the festivals together. All of the festivals. Hunting, Beslin called it, and when Matt said hunting for girls without thinking, he would never have said that in front of somebody's mother had he thought. The boy laughed and said,
"A girl or a fight, pouting lips or a flashing blade. Whichever dance you're dancing at the moment is always the most fun. Wouldn't you say so, Matt?"
Tylan smiled at Beslin fondly. Matt managed a weak laugh. This Beslin was mad. Him and his mother both.